Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Marked a half century since the Philadelphia Flyers' first Stanley Cup championship. Join us now for a special NHL Wraparound Podcast, reliving the Cup on Broad Street 50 years later.
Now it gives me great pleasure and an honor, really, to bring on to NHL Wraparound the special edition, the son of the founder of the Philadelphia Flyers, the man that gave Philadelphia its hockey team. That was Ed Snyder. Jay Snyder is here with us, who also acted as the president for a number of years. Jay, thanks for doing this with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
And of course, the man who needs no introduction, who is a Hall of Famer, fantastic. You can't have enough accolades for Bernie Parent, two-time MVP of the playoffs, and just a tremendous person as well as a tremendous goaltender. And thanks, Bernie, so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure. Let's have fun. Think about this. 50 years ago, we won May 19th. 50 years ago. My God, I'm only 55.
Yeah. Where does the time go?
Incredible. Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you guys, and I guess Jay, it's you were a real young guy than what I'm going to talk about, but the Flyers came into the league in 67, like we all know. A lot of people don't realize that even though the Blues got to the final that year, it was the Flyers who ended in first place. So they had a successful season. They got, you know, they played against the Blues, and there came a point, and Vic can enumerate it even better than I can, when your dad and decided that, okay, we're not going to get pushed around anymore. The Blues have pushed us around in the playoffs here. I don't like what I'm seeing, and we're going to change who the Flyers are. Do you remember or can speak to that at all?
I do. Maybe I remember it from hearing about it in later years, but Bernie, of course, lived it, but it was really clear that the Blues were physically brutalizing the Flyers. And I remember my dad's feeling was, this isn't necessarily the way we want to play, but we have to. I'm not letting one of my teams get pushed around again. And if the St. Louis Blues and the big bad Bruins are the model, then we're going to be bigger, badder, and tougher than anybody.
There was an incident, Bernie, and you were on this club in the 68 playoff where Noel Picard, who is probably more famous than anything else for pitchforking Bobby Orr in the air on his winning goal in 1970, but he cold cocked Claude LaForge. And apparently, Jay and Bernie also, that was the seminal moment when it was recognized that the team had to change its ways to combat the style that the Blues were playing at that time.
Yeah. They so true. But you know what the beauty about I'm going to call him Ed Snyder. You know, I love this man so much. And like Jay was saying, this is when you realize that if we want to move forward and win championships, we have to change our approach. You know, skating and shooting was fine, but eventually you have to have, you know, in those days you had to have toughness, you know, and then, you know, and Ed surrounded himself with good people like Kate Allen as a GM, you know, Fred Sherrill was a coach, and you know, you put all those names and then, of course, leading the way together. they came up with the, you know, the right team. And I may say the right goalie, too. Yeah.
Bernie's talking about Doug Favell now.
Yeah. My buddy. Yeah, love him. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, so after the second of those two playoff series with the Blues, then Bobby Clark gets drafted, you know, smallish player, diabetic. There was some question whether or not he'd be able to hold up for the rigors of the league. Shiro is hired in the 71-72 season, and you guys really start to push forward. But there were some growing pains also. You know, the last game of the 71-72 season, all you needed was a tie in Buffalo, and Jerry Meehan scores on Doug Favell from a long shot with 4 seconds left to knock the team out of the playoffs. But then a year later in 73, you get that big goal in the quarterfinals by Gary Dornhofer, which is immortalized in bronze still as one of the great moments in Flyer history. And Jay, Bernie, you were on a hiatus from the Flyers at the time between Toronto and the Blazers and the WHA. But Jay, can you even get a sense as a young man as you were at the time that this was really starting to build towards something special?
Yeah, you have to understand the Flyers were sort of woven into my family culture by then. It was so imbued in all of the children. I had three siblings, and our life very much revolved around it. So all of the excitement my parents were feeling was running through us as well. And in fact, the artist they chose, my parents built a place on a lake in Maine, and we used to go there for our holidays in the summers. And they chose a Maine artist who we knew they'd become friends with him to make that statue. So that's how tied together it all was within my family. And I knew the artist. I was just a kid, but they were friends with him. So he would be there for dinner or whatever. So, we were all part of it in a way.
So, Bernie, now, you returned via trade with Toronto, who still had your NHL rights for the 73-74 season. You see what's going on in Philadelphia, but realistically, what are your expectations with returning to the club?
Well, let's go back a little bit, 2 years. When I got traded from the Flyers to Toronto, I'll never forget driving up to Toronto, disappointed, I got traded and all that stuff. And not too long after, maybe 2 or 3 weeks after, I realized that, hey, wait a second. I was studying duties with Jacques Plante from Montreal, who Jacques Plante was one of the famous goaltender ever played the game, And I watched him practice. I watched him play. Then I asked him, I said, Jacques, in French, by the way. I asked him, I said, hey, can you help me? He said, of course. And I learned from him how to read the plays, how to read my defensemen, different things. And I learned so much from him. 2 years, I played in Toronto, right? And then at the end of the second year, that's when the World Hockey League came in. And I received a phone call. Would you like to join us? I thought about it a little bit, and then I said, why not? If it doesn't work out, I'll come back to National Hockey League. So I said, sure. It didn't work out. We're playing in front of 500 people, which I was used to play in front of 18,000 people. Makes a big difference. So anyway, I came back National Hockey League. And then this is when Toronto made the deal and traded me back to Philly. Think about this, right? And then when I came in with Philly, the whole team was ready, the whole city, and it was just incredible. And we ended up in winning the first championship.
Bernie, if I remember correctly, your first preseason, was it the preseason game back to you let up a lot of goals. Wasn't it? It was just, I think it's just a preseason game. It was, oh my God. It's like the whole team had a bad game.
Well, you know what? Just to show people that the game will get better, folks. Yeah. And it did get better. You know, you know what? I've learned from Plant and as a young kid that you will have situations like this, but you learn from it and then move on and keep thinking positively. And then you move forward and good things happen. Yep.
Bernie, I just an overall goaltending question, because I've tried to tell kids this along the way, and you can describe it better than me. But a goaltender above anybody in the world has to live in the moment. And when the moment that the puck goes by him and goes into the net, he has to move on to the next moment without thinking about that moment, because that'll throw his focus off. And I think goaltenders are masters of this. They are masters of, you know, a goal goes in, they grab the water bottle, they take a drink, they shake it off, and they move right on. I just wondered your, like, if you can describe that, because you did it obviously very, very well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, you program yourself, like I said a little bit earlier, for an example, as a goaltender, if I have a defenseman, a one-on-one, okay, and the guy's a left-hand shooter, pardon me, you have the defenseman playing the man, not the puck, the man. So in that case, more likely the shot will go my stick side. And then if it's a right-hand shot, more likely the shot will go on my glove side. So when you're talking about, you know, getting situations sometimes that things aren't going that well, you know, you're able to push that aside and recondition yourself with what you learn and what works for the game, how to study your defenseman, communicate with your defenseman, and then the whole thing comes back together and everything works out.
So the team now coming into the 73-74 season, you're traded, Bernie, along with Rick McLeish to the Flyers. Club is really an interesting construction of draft picks, trades, players from the expansion draft, and this all starts to formulate the Broad Street Bully mentality, which was kind of coined in 72-73 by the Philadelphia Bulletin reporter, Jack Chevalier. And so now you've got what they called the terror squad of Dave Schultz, Bob Kelly, Don Selesky, Andre DuPont, you know, Ed Van Imp. I mean, but a real team, Jay, that's kind of built in the image that your father had saw, with some skills, some toughness, and of course, Bernie is the foundation in net. And is this when you just kind of felt, playing off the success of making the semis in 1973, that this club was ready to take the next step?
Well, it's you explained that properly, because as a player, you have to realize that it's not one individual that wins. It's the whole team. Yeah. And I believe also in life, you know, if you want to succeed in life, you have to be, and I shared this with a lot of young kids, you have your passion for something in life, you know, and you start going for your passion, a lot of your friends will start laughing and say, oh, forget that, stay with us, find your job, everything will be fine. No. You have a passion for something, push it, push them aside if they don't agree, and keep moving towards your passion. And that's what we ended up as a team of passion. And the passion was to win the Stanley Cup as a team, not just the one individual. And what I mean by a team was the players, coaching staff, management, the crowd in Philly, and on and on and on. That's how we ended up, because look, at the first Stanley Cup we won 1-0. You know, we had a good goalie, but you know, we won 1-0, right? And to beat Boston, when they had Orr, Busick, and all those guys, to beat them 1-0 in a big game like this was just incredible. But it was incredible because we built that, what I was just talking about, that team effort to win the big game, you know, and to make it happen. And that's how we ended up winning. The whole team participated. Even if one guy only played 2 minutes, his 2 minutes made a big difference. It could have been the goal against us, you know, but the way we felt as it. And then I want to bring Clarkie too, you know, in this. Clarkie was without Clarkie, I don't know if we would have won those games. Great, great, great leader, great individual. And you need leadership too. You need the team, but you need leadership, you know, to make it happen. It was fantastic player. Yep.
Well, I do remember this when Bernie came back. I do remember there was a lot of excitement. My dad had a lot of excitement that this is the piece we're missing. I don't know if he felt that we could win the cup, and I don't know what the expectations were for Rick McLeish at that point, but there was a lot of excitement that Bernie coming back was the key ingredient. And he also believed strongly that you build a team from the goal out, from the back end, and that piece was missing, and that there was a solid defense in place in front of Bernie. Also, that to win, you usually have a core of 5-6 leaders. And it's not just one, it's Clarkie, but then who else is going to support him? Who are those key guys? Joe Watson, Ed Van Imp, Bernie, I mean, others that were in that squad that, you know, maybe Dorney. Bernie would know better what the leadership group was, but a lot of that was in place, but the goaltending wasn't. And when Bernie came, the feeling was we really have something now.
So you guys, the team goes on to have 50 wins and 112 points. And what I find amazing about that regular season is your longest losing streak was 3 games. I mean, that's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, three games. That's one. That's when Bobby Taylor was in there, you know? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm joking because he's my friend, you know, my buddy. I'm just joking. But, you know, you just said that. You guys just said it. You know, we had to win the championship like this, 1-0 against a team like Boston. Come on. You know, we had to have the whole city, not just the players, but the crowd, you know, the whole city. I remember stepping on the ice, you know, before the first face-off, and the crowd would be standing up and cheering, you know. And my God, we're just thinking about this again, getting the goosebumps now, you know, just incredible. And the word I use all the time when I look back like this, and yesterday I did the whole day, the one word I use is grateful. You know, when you're grateful, you know, and you visualize what you want to do, you know, universe comes along and makes it happen for you. It's a beautiful, beautiful way to live. Yeah.
Well,
the losing streak, Bernie, actually took place within the first 5 or 7 games of the season. And, you know, to think that you guys went through the rest of the regular season and the playoffs on such a high. But Jay, I'm going to ask you this first. Do you think that people were taking this team seriously? I mean, they were on a 50-win pace all season, well over 100 points. And it seems that this team didn't quite get the recognition until a nationally televised game in February in Montreal. And the whole identity of the Flyers kind of came out with the one-punch knockout by Schultz on John Van Boxmeer. And I know, Bernie, you were there also, bench-clearing brawl. Everybody got to see it. And all of a sudden, the team kind of gets vilified for their style of play.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I mean, Bernie has to answer this. I don't remember whether it was taken seriously, but what I do remember very well is that the Flyers were the best draw in the league. I mean, people love to hate the team, and it was a phenomenon. I mean, the write-ups across the country, and I mean, there was so much excitement in my household around my dad, mom, who was involved, from it. I couldn't speak to your question exactly, but I could tell you the excitement around us and the Flyers and the team traveling and on the road was incredible. But Bernie, of course, lived it on the ice in Montreal.
Yeah, it was, you know what, it was cool. But, you know, I want to mention too, the one name, which I'll be grateful for the rest of my life, is Ed Snyder. I'll repeat this. Ed Snyder. You know, what a great ownership, yeah. A great individual. He cared about the game, you know, and for him to have the ability to choose the right people, you know, to run the team, the whole bit is just incredible. And what a great, you know, loved him. What a great, great individual. And every time I met him, it's just a warm feeling, you know, and from this one man. And you know, you know, successful people surround themselves with the right people. And that's what he did, you know. And in addition to the players, the people, and you know, the management, you know, coaches or whatever, he made a decision. And my God, I'm so grateful for him. And one of these days, we'll be up there, you know, talking to him and talk about what we're talking about now. And we'll rejoice for days and days and days.
Hey, Vic, one thing about that Flyers team, there were so many good fighters on that team. I remember Tommy Bladen rarely fought, but when he did, he just stood straight up and punched someone's lights out. Ricky McLeish, I remember when Simone Nolet cut open John Ferguson in Montreal. Wow. You remember that? I mean,
and
that was
Fergie
unbelievable.
Fergie was a hell of a fighter too.
Probably the only guy on that team that couldn't fight was Clarkey, and he started most of them.
Well, there were two, Jay. I couldn't fight either. That's why I kept my mask on.
I'm going to tell you guys something about Bernie you don't know. He is very physically strong. We spent some time together after he retired hunting and so forth. And this man is a bull. You don't realize. And I used to see him in those days, the goalies didn't have bulky equipment. And you see Bernie in the locker room. He played 70 some games. His arms were black and blue. I mean, it was that those arm pads were like nothing. And the pain, he doesn't talk. He's always happy like this. And I'm sure it kept the locker room light, you know, with all the pressure, he wouldn't show it and always has a smile and a good laugh. But the abuse he took, he's never talked about, but I saw it firsthand.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's those black and blue signs. It's a good sign. The fuck didn't go in, you know. I made the same. Yeah, it's a good sign. But you know, in the old days, it was more about studying the game than protecting yourself. And you know, it was, and I have to share this with you very quickly here. And I feel sad for the goalies these days. You know, the equipment they're wearing, not for themselves individual, but they, you know, the pads are built in, but they can't move their feet, so they have to drop to their knees all the time. When you drop to your knees, the puck changes directions. Then you can't challenge the shooter. Or whatever. And then in front of the net, you can't check the players anymore. You know, just like we used to, you know, in the old days. And, that's why I'm so grateful I played when I played, because that's, to me, anyway, that's the way the game should be played.
Going back, Bernie, to the playoffs start after that incredible regular season. And you guys, of course, sweep the, Atlanta 1.0. That's the Atlanta Flames. You sweep them. But then, like every team that I think that wins a cup, you face some adversity when you go against the Rangers in the next round, and it actually ends up taking you seven games to win, and you become the first expansion team ever to knock out an original six team. Do you remember a lot about that Ranger series?
Oh yeah, of course. And we made it seven games to keep it exciting for the people. No, but they had the Rangers had a good, you know, they had a great team. They had a lot of good Hatfield, Gilbert, and all those guys, Jack Dominion goal, you know, which I'm good friends with those guys all the time, you know, good people. But they, you know, when you step on the ice, the friendship disappears. I hate to say this, but because you have a purpose is to move on, win the games, and move on to the next series. But they were, New York was a type of a team that would bring the best out of you because they were a very good, very good team. Yeah, good people.
Neil, I think a very famous thing happened in that game seven, which was when Dave Schultz fought Dale Roth, who was not a fighter. And if you remember that, it was really, there are videos of it. It's hard to watch. It was kind of terrible, but the Rangers, no one jumped in. And it was really thought by our team and sports writers and everyone at that time that was it. After that, the Rangers, it took the heart out of them. They didn't help this poor guy. And we went on and win that game. I don't know if Bernie remembers it, but I know that was widely thought to be the turning point in game seven.
Yeah, just to show you the Rangers, the players were smart. Nobody wanted to jump in that fight. The way they was fighting, you know, but this is the togetherness we had as a family. And I will never, never, never forget that, you know, especially we went on the road. In the old days, you know, we used to go out, and if you had a couple of days before a game, we all got together, had a few drinks, a big meal, and stuff like this. We were a family, you know. And somebody hurt one of our family, he paid that price, and all the opposite teams knew that. It was very, very important.
Jay, I have a friend of mine, a very dear friend, who's been a Ranger season ticket holder since the 60s. And unbeknownst to him about this podcast or anything else that about the Flyers, he has referenced that that incident as disgraceful, not to the Flyers, but to the Rangers, because they didn't jump in. And I think, myself being part of the Rangers during the 90s, that had lived on. That sort of mentality of the Flyers could kick the crap out of the Rangers sort of went on all through the 80s. And we finally turned a corner on that in the early 90s. But man, that was 20 years of that stuff of going in. I mean, because after the team we're talking about, then in came people like Paul Holmgren, who terrified people just by his forechecking ability and the way that he could run you into the boards. I won't go far and far into that, but I'm just saying I think you're absolutely right that incident and the fact that the Rangers didn't come together the way Bernie says that the Flyers would always come together, I think that lasted for quite a while between the two organizations at least.
I think part of the lore with that also was that supposedly Rolf told the Rangers not to jump in because the third man rule was in effect back then. But there was some, you know, there was some rough things. I mean, there was hair pulling going on, and it was a pretty ugly incident. But, you know, to your point, Jay, I think that did turn that game around because it was just midway through the first period and the Flyers always seemed to have the upper hand in that game. And Dorney scored the winning goal during the third period, I think, to make it 4-2, and the Rangers got to 4-3 and could never get closer. But there's also an irony with Rolf, because I want to go back a few games in that series, and that you guys really suffered a really serious loss, because in overtime of game four, Rolf hit Barry Ashby in the eye with a shot, which wound up being career ending. And it really had to take something for you guys to overcome such a devastating injury to such a meaningful teammate.
Yeah, you know, you have a good point there. And Barry was a fantastic defenseman, you know, loved him dearly. And when it happened, and I keep referring to teamwork, this is when the team got closer and closer again, because we had lost such a great player. And this is what happened, guys. You know, when you start the season, you know, training camp or whatever, and you have good communication among the players. You know, if anybody gets a cheap shot and, you know, and gets hurt, somebody has to pay a price for it. You know, and that's doesn't matter what the rules are. Those are our rules. You know, it's very important. So I keep referring to it's called the team effort. You know, you work together, you win together, you lose together. Not too often, but when you lose, you learn from with the coaches and the players. You talk about it, and they show the films, and then then you practice, you make the corrections, and you're good again for the next game. But this situation with the, you know, with this, I think it was a staff shot from the blue line, I think, and with Barry, and it was just it was a sad situation, that's for sure. Yeah.
But you guys managed to overcome it. And so now I want Neil and I to start walking you through the final against Boston. And we really haven't gotten into Fred Shiro too much, and we're going to do so now. Because I guess before the series even starts, he gives the Bruins a little bit of bulletin board material saying that New York was a tougher opponent than the Bruins were going to be. And I think, Bernie, some of the players were a little bit surprised about that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I was, because Freddie was my driver when we went to the airport. You know, we went on the road. Freddie would pick me up and take me to the game and take me to the airport too. So one time we came back from California and we had like 4 or 5 days off coming back. And, I was drinking then, and we're all drinking, and Freddie had a little bit too much, you know, but still he took me home. And then before he dropped me off, he said, you know what? Exactly. I forget a little bit how to get to my house from here. So I explained it, you know, how to get back there and stuff like this. So the next morning at practice, he said, my God, he said, if you would have been Columbus, we'd still be looking for America, he said. And what a good bet he was. Awesome. Yeah.
Good man. Jay, what's the best story you have about Shiro?
What's this?
Jay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I mean, I don't think I have many. Although once I did give him a saying, because it was on a little plaque in our house somewhere, and I told it to him, and he used it on the blackboard one day. So players don't know one of those sayings came from me.
But what Bernie in the locker room and in preparation for the Bruins, who had Phil Esposito and Wayne Cashman and Hodge and, of course, Bobby Orr and all these great players. And, I mean, what was the strategy to play against Bobby Orr? Because Bobby Orr back then was obviously the Wayne Gretzky he was the league-wide best player. Was there a particular way you were going to blanket him or do something that to not let him, you know, run the puck up the ice all the time?
You know, of course. You know, Orr was a great player. And it was always very important to cover him when he didn't have the puck. You know, and as a team, that's what you would work on. But the players you just mentioned on that team in Boston, And the last game when we won, it was a sixth game at home. We won the 1-0. You look at this and you say, wow, you know what? You know, thank you, Lord, you know, because as much as you want to work as a team and really work your system for me as a goalie or whatever, in defenseman and forward, you know, it's just that I look back, you know, yesterday, I spent the whole day thinking about that one game when we won 1-0, you know, and I tried for 12 hours, guys, for 12 hours to find weakness in my system. I couldn't find one. Just kidding. But, the system was the team itself, you know, that, yeah, think about this, all the players you mentioned, and we won at home 1-0, the crowd, you know, cheering 17,000, 007, I believe, and you had the whole crowd cheering, you know, the confidence we had, you know, the get together, the players, you know, and trusting each other, knowing and communicating as it needs to be, you know, during the game. Or just you look back and say, wow, I was part of a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful team. Not just as far as hockey was concerned, but thinking, you know, good people and caring people about each other and the whole bit. And that's all we want. I get pumped right now, you know, just talking about it. It was so beautiful. And you know what was so beautiful? You know what was Ed Snyder in the dressing room with holding and drinking out of the Stanley Cup? Are you kidding me? It does put tears in my eyes. You know, that is something I'll never forget. And when my day comes, I move on with my life. He's upstairs. He's watching now. He's watching us. And I'm going to sit down with him and have a cup of coffee and talk about the good old days. That's for sure. We won't talk about Jay. Guys, we just talk about the game. That's right.
Well, I say that Dad, he built a lot of businesses, but his passion was one. Always just one. A couple things come to mind. One about Freddie. I remember there was a practice where he had all the players turn their sticks upside down and try to execute the practice with the butt end of their stick. And finally, Clarkie went over and said, "Freddie, what are you doing? We're wasting our time here." And Freddie said, "Yeah, we are. I was waiting for someone to say something." He wanted the players to think. He was revolutionary. And I also remember actually the strategy with Orr to dump the puck in his side all the time, not to avoid him, to wear him down, make him carry the puck all night. That's completely different thinking than any other coach would have had. And it actually reminds me of the famous game against the Red Army. And I remember that so well, where that game started out and the Russians had the puck and they came back into their end and they made 5-6 passes. They're weaving in and out. And we're just standing there across the red line, waiting for them. And of course, that was the strategy. Make them come to us. Don't chase them. Brilliant. So it completely frustrated them. So I'm sure there's 100 more things like that. But Fred Shiro clearly was unorthodox and thought differently than any other coach of that day, I would think.
In order to reach this first championship, we're going to go back a little bit, because you have to win a game in Boston. And you guys had not won in 19 trips to Boston Garden, and you're close in game one, or winds up winning the game with 22 seconds left in regulation. But then game two, you guys come back. Moose DuPont ties the game with 52 seconds left in regulation. And then Clark scores on a rebound from Flett and Schultz in overtime. You even the series. And at that point, Jay and Bernie, is that the point where you guys really believe this can happen because you've got home ice in this final?
Well, I could say from my standpoint, absolutely. I remember it so well. And in fact, when I was president of the club, I had a trophy made by a famous sculptor. It's the MVP trophy every year. And the trophy is that scene. It's Clarkey jumping in the air with his feet behind him. And that is the thing we picked as the most consequential moment, really, we thought, in our history. In the 1980s, when I had that done.
No, that's beautiful. They, you know, when Clarkey scored that goal on the rebound, you know, to win the game, and the excitement we had as a team, you know, it shows why we won the Stanley Cup, you know. Pardon me. So we won as a team. As a matter of fact, just before that goal, I don't know if you remember, Johnny Busick came in on the breakaway. And I forget the goalie for the Flyers at the time, but he made a heck of a save. Yeah.
I remember the game, the 1-0, the final game, with late in the game, I think it was Busick came down the right wing and launched like a phenomenal shot that was headed for the far side. And your foot came out. You kicked that at the last second. It was unbelievable. Because I was on that side of the ice and you could see that puck was shot perfectly. And
the reason I waited, you know, to make my move was to create a little bit of excitement with the crowd. You know? So
I did it.
Well, Jay, it was actually Kenny Hodge that had that.
Okay.
I went back, looked back and saw it. But, you know, I want to just keep bringing this forward. And so you guys hold serve at home. You win games 3 and 4, go back to Boston, lose 5-2. And then you're coming back from game 6, and Shiro has on the chalkboard, win today and we walk together forever. And you combine that with Kate Smith appearing live for the first time. And I think the team was like 36-3-1 with her singing. She shows up live and describe to us just the largesse of the Shiro quote on the chalkboard, Kate Smith singing in person. It just had all the makings for the enormous finish that you guys delivered.
If you remember, Esposito and I forget who else came over and presented her with flowers. Okay. And she took the flowers, gave it to her assistant, right? And she went like this, too. To kill it for zero. Yeah. Yeah. And, that was, you know what? I'll never forget this. And then when we won the cup, then we were in front of City Hall, right? And I was standing next to her. She tapped me a little bit, you know, good job, buddy. Good job. You know, she... What a great, awesome senior, but great individual. That was awesome. Those are beautiful times, you know? And you look at this, and we're talking like it happened last year. It was 50 years ago, for God's sakes. Yeah? That's a, when you think about how grateful you should be, life is a beautiful thing, you know? And if you have a good positive attitude and you believe in a good old Lord, the power that, you know, it's creating what we're living in now. It's a beautiful life with beautiful friends, you know. That's awesome. Yeah.
I want to bring up one thing to you two guys. being so involved with the Flyers and just listening to this story about the first cup and remembering in my own life, I was about to go to college that year. So I remember it well. And I remember from Toronto, where I grew up, thinking I didn't really believe that an expansion team would ever win the Stanley Cup. Because, you know, the original six and Toronto had won it in 67 and, you know, Montreal wins it. Boston would win it. Like, not one of these expansion teams. My point in bringing that up, Jay and Bernie, is that in 1994, there was the same feeling that the Rangers would never really win the Stanley Cup. I mean, it was like just like they've gone 54. There's no way they're going to win. And when we did it, it was almost like surreal, like because you knew that the enormity of that cup in New York, not having been there for 54 years, in lifetime, basically a lifetime. Now, in Philadelphia, you had to have been getting that same sort of vibe and feeling that, my God, what have we just done? We've gone in and slayed the dragon. We're the first expansion team. Like, we're an expansion team and we've won the cup. Like, describe that, because it has to be overwhelming when you do that, because you've beaten all the odds and won the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was, for me, we were so caught up in the moment of it and the excitement. I'd say in my house, I was 17 years old at the time, but we were so caught up in it. And there was a certain confidence that my dad had. And I don't think, I think we, you know, did we go into the series against Boston like confident we're going to beat the Bruins of that era? I know, but I don't think we felt we didn't belong there at all. I mean, there was a certain feeling of inevitability, I think. And by the way, I just some little stories along the way. I never witnessed this, but Tom Brookshire, the former sportscaster, used to love telling this story. Say, talk about getting off a bus in Boston during this series. And wherever we were staying, there was a swimming pool. And he told the story. Clarkie saw the players looking at the pool and he just said, there will be no swimming. That was it. Like, don't even look over there, you guys. He loved that story. When I was in Boston, my brother and I are sitting a row or so behind the Flyers bench. And fans were throwing coins at our head. Like, we're getting pelted with coins, and because we're rooting for the Flyers. I don't think they know we're Snyders. We're just Flyers fans. And we got nearly in an altercation with somebody. It got heated and there was words and guards had to come down. After the game in the locker room, the Hound, Bobby Kelly, looks at me. My brother says, I thought I was going to have to jump in the stands for you guys. We had no idea he was watching this. So It was just very tight family thing. And we, you know, there's a certain confidence, I think, came from my dad and the players. It was a confident team and you just felt like it was possible. And then I'm going to say something, Neil, to you about your Rangers team. Once you got Messier, I thought you were going to win. And the reason I thought that is that in 1987, Mike Keenan, who was our coach, coached the Team Canada. The Canada Cup. We had several players. This was a tremendous series. Remember, 3-6-5 games against in the finals against Russia. And afterwards, I said, what did you learn coaching all these players? You had Lemieux and Gretzky and Messier and, you know, team captains, Yzerman probably. I mean, it was just an amazing team. And he said, I learned that Messier is the leader of Edmonton, not Gretzky. And I said, really? Tell me about it. And he said, the guys are in the room, you know, you bring them all together for the first practice and everybody's, you know, joking around, talking. Said suddenly you got like probably 10 team captains in there. Davey Pullen for the Flyers was there. Messier stood up. He said, all right, listen up. This is how it's going to be. And he just took over the room. Keenan said he never had to do anything. Messier just took charge. Nobody appointed him. He appointed himself. When you guys got Messier, I thought, that's like Clarkey. You're going to win.
You were right.
Well, you know, it's so remarkable to look back, you know, 50 years later at the leadership of Clark and, you know, to really frustrate Orr in the final the way you did. And I know that during that series, there was an incident in front of the net and Orr threw a glove at Clark, and probably the play that sealed it for you guys was Clark having a breakaway and Orr having to pull him down in the last 2.5 minutes of the game, and the frustration of Orr going to the penalty box. It was almost like that was the culmination of the game plan of dumping the puck in his corner, making him play it, wearing him down and frustrating him. And just to see that execute to a T and having your leader, Clark, be right in the middle of it. And Bernie, you know, you with the big saves. And of course, we already talked about, you know, the save on Hodge with 2 minutes left and the classic split save. Nobody looked better on a split than you did, Bernie.
Well, you're kind. I thought the uniform looked good on me, too. Yeah. You know what? When you're in that stage, you know, the world doesn't exist. The crowd is just a sound that you hear, you know, and you're so focused on the game, the world doesn't exist. Nothing exists, you know, and that's the concentration that you need to perform. And you know, my case, to make a save, you know. I told Ken Hodge, because he skated in front of me after he took the shot, I said, my God, I love the way you shoot, man. You helped me make good saves, you know. So, no, but, yeah. He started laughing, you know, but the concentration that you have at that moment, it's beyond, you know, imagination. It's just incredible. And all the players on our team, the crowd, the coaching staff, or whatever, Ed Snyder, of course, and that's how we formed that one big team that beat the Boston Bruins, because they had a fantastic, you know, a great team. Yeah.
You know, I was always humored, you know, when you go back and you look at the video of this and the horn runs out. Do you remember the first thing that you did, Bernie? You shoveled the crease with your stick. You just got to clean your crease off. And then you've got players jumping in your arms. And, you know, unlike today where Gary Bettman comes out and he presents the cup and there's the speech and everything, you guys get the cup. Fans are all over the ice. And you really don't have the opportunity. I mean, it's you and Clarkey carrying the cup around, but you really don't have the opportunity to parade the cup. And there's video, you know, you could see Bill Clement actually pushing fans out of the way. And I had asked him years later when I worked with him at ESPN, I said, you know, were you really angry at that moment? He says, yeah, because that was our moment. And the fans, as delirious as they were, they kind of took that away from us, having taken away the ability to just parade the cup around by as a team, which is what you guys were.
You know, it's funny you're saying Bill was angry, right? And I think that was the only time during the finals that Bill was angry. I'm just kidding, guys. I'm just kidding. I'm a good player. We, you know what, and the Moose Dupont was, you know what, I loved him. He's a great defenseman, French, you know, and he would talk to me in French, right? You know, and the family approach we had, the fun we had together, that's what made it the whole organization. That's right.
Bernie, you told me once that after Moose had a bad game, he turned to you. He said, I think I'm going to go jump over the bridge.
Yeah.
Off the bridge. Yeah, I'm going to jump over the bridge.
So as a Frenchman, I ask him, how are you going to do it? Oh, my God. And the fun, that's what we did. You know, we had fun the whole time. You know, especially, you know, on the road, we had dinner together, you know, you know, that togetherness we had. And then if we had weaknesses, which it did during the season, and we talked about it, you know, how do we solve this problem, you know? And then once you get the answer, then you get on the ice and you perform better. I would say, what a great family we had. That was awesome. And here, that's it right here, guys.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
You know, 50 years ago, this one right here, 50 years ago. Think about this. Yeah.
That's what we're all about here, right?
Jay, you were what, 40, 42 then? 50 years ago? Oh, God. You know, amazing. Quickly, I don't hunt anymore, but, you know, I had back surgeries, and so I have another 3-4 months out to go. But we used to go hunting, you know, and we had more fun of chasing the deer than shooting the deer, you know. And we had a good friend of ours, Bud Leafy, that came out with us. And the fun we had, wasn't it great, Jay? You know what? And it all comes down to, again, that togetherness. And I repeat this for people that are listening or watching. Togetherness, folks, will bring miracles in your life. Never forget that.
Quickly, you guys, you know, you have the parade. It's phenomenal. 2 million people show up. And then the next season, now you're coming in as favorites. So you have the top record in the league, and you wind up taking out Buffalo in 6 games. And the 6th game, you beat Roger Crozier, Bob Kelly, and Clement Score in the 3rd period. Compare the difference of the 2 cups quickly.
Well, you know, the first cup was something that, of course, you're going for a Stanley Cup. You're winning. You're in the finals, and you won a Stanley Cup. But the excitement that kept building up game after game after game was just incredible. Buffalo, they had a great team too. But I think Boston was better, and they had this French connection, which I speak French. That's all we beat them. I'm just kidding. But they, something that became very special. And, we went on and beat them. As a matter of fact, beat them in Buffalo, you know, 2-0. I think like it was 1-0, with a minute or two left in the game. Then we scored and became 2-0. So think about this. The 2 Stanley Cups, the first one, the last game that won the Stanley Cup, we won 1-0 against Boston. And second one, we won 2-0 against Buffalo. Think about this, you know. So you have to have a heck of a good team to do this, to perform like that. Yeah, that was cool. Thank you, Lord.
Jay, how is this different for your dad and yourself?
Good question. I couldn't say really too much about it. Just at this point, the Flyers, I mean, we expected to be good. So all that had changed. I think what's also significant, though, is that Buffalo was an expansion franchise. And all of a sudden, this opened the door up, I think, for expectations around the league. And of course, a few years later come the Islanders dynasty. So I think what really was significant is that the Flyers made it pretty clear that the NHL was now no longer about the original six. It was about everybody.
Beautiful. Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So in 76, you're going for the three-peat. Bernie, you've got a neck injury. You do make it to the final again. And Wayne Stevenson is playing goal, and you get swept out by the Montreal Canadiens, which to a lot of people, it was almost like the good over evil. It was the Flying Frenchman beating out the Broad Street Bullies. But by that time, you know, the legacy is already there, and it's etched in history. And Bernie, I know for you, you know, nowadays, really starting in the 90s, players got the Stanley Cup to spend a day with. And for you, you had to wait 45 years. And it wasn't until 2019 that you finally got your day with the Cup. So just to describe what that meant after 4.5 decades to finally really have that moment.
Well, it was, you know, after so many years, like you said, you get the cup. It's like there's no space in between that when we won and enjoying the Stanley Cup, you know, just looking at this beautiful trophy and you look at it and then you see your name, you know, your name on the Stanley Cup. Wow. You know, this is, you know, I will never, you know, never forget, you know, never forget. And the players, you know, again, I hate to repeat myself with the players, the crowd, the people, you know, and the organization. And of course, the king of the kings, Ed Snyder. Yeah. That to me was, I was able to hug the Stanley Cup and give it a big kiss, and my Lord, it was awesome. Yeah.
And Jay, for you to see your dad's name on there.
Oh, yeah. I remember I went to the Hall of Fame and I saw it there, you know, just in the case. I would say this, though. When Bernie got hurt, the team kept going, and Wayne Stevenson was a competent goalie, but there's no doubt in my mind that cost us that cup. The games, I think three of them were one goal games, but not only the one goal, and not to say he let in bad goals, but the confidence of the team in front of Bernie to take risks, to know that he would bail them out if necessary, changed the whole game for the Flyers. And I really believe that cost us that cup. And who knows what would have happened if Bernie, you know, had stayed healthy for the rest, you know, the rest of his natural career. So that hurt. And Montreal, of course, became a dynasty. Now, Neil, you may remember this, but part of the expansion rules were that Montreal got the first two French Canadians picked every year for a number of years. And I don't remember when that ended, but that a lot of those players were picked at that time. And when I look at that Montreal team, yeah, you can't take from them that they were a great team, but the way that was built was pretty unfair, actually. So I think when you look at the way the Flyers were built and what might have happened, I think we would have had at least three cups with Bernie. And then you look at the Islanders after that were built the old-fashioned way. I think these were the two great early franchises. And give my dad credit and the team he put around him for what they accomplished there. And what they might have accomplished if this other man here on this podcast had not unfortunately been injured.
Well, guys, I'd just like to say a couple of things before we wrap up here. First of all, I can't thank you guys enough. This is such a joy for me to do this. I'm honored to do this, and I know Vic is too, after 50 years, and for you guys to give us this time. Bernie, I come of a player's generation right behind you, so I watched you play. I'm a Torontonian. I saw you play in Toronto. I saw you play for the Flyers. You're one of my idols, and I really mean that. I wasn't a goalie, but to me, you're you're really one of my idols. I just want to tell you that. And when I got to meet you in the hallways of the Spectrum, I was thrilled every time. So I just wanted to leave you with that. And Jay,
and Jay, I want to say something. Looking at those two guys, we spend an hour with or whatever. I remember when I played, right? And some people, I had bad games. People threw stuff at me on the ice, and those two guys, I remember those two faces, man.
Well, Jay, I want to say something to you. We've known each other a long time, and I think I've said this to you before, but I want this to be public. The thing I most admire about your dad, and I was with the Islanders for a couple of years. So the Flyers were the bad guys to us. And then I was with the Rangers for 11 years. And of course, the Flyers were the, you know, me and Clark, you went head to head when he was GM. But the one thing I so admire about your dad, and this was really what the Philadelphia Flyers stood for, was they were going to try to win every single year. Whether they made the playoffs or didn't, that didn't have anything to do with it. They were trying as hard as they could. And Mr. Snyder was trying to put out, he didn't care about money. He didn't care about anything. He just wanted to win. And you were going to have a tough time in the Spectrum and then in the new building. And I so admire that about your dad. There was very few owners in the league that had that attitude. I think that Mr. Ilitch had that attitude when he got the Detroit Red Wings in 82, and some others did, but they were the teams that you always had to worry about because, you know, just like our famous Lindros episode, they were going to battle you hard to try to be as good as they could be. And I really want to leave that with you, that even though we were going against each other, I was in awe of your dad and of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Thank you, Neil. It was always a pleasure being associated with you. And my dad, he was a unique person. And this team, he was the team and the team was him, no doubt. It was his passion through and through.
Well, his face will always be part of that Flyers logo. You may not see it very clearly, but if you look and you know where to look, you'll see his face in that logo. I truly believe that. So, guys, thanks so much for doing this. We're going to wrap right now, or I could keep going all day and night, but unfortunately our producers can't. But thank you so much for doing this, and God bless. And Bernie, I hope to see you along the way, you know, another time, maybe walking in the hallway somewhere in a building.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And you guys are beautiful. And my buddy here, you know, he's, you know what, how old are you now, Jay?
66.
You know, it's almost like you feel like my son, for God's sakes. And, you know, we hunted, you know, we played, we won Stanley Cups and the whole bit, you know. It just when we get together, there's mistake, you know. It's just a beautiful life. Yeah. Thank you, Lord.
I love
that, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.